the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, the governor's public health commission, plus Biden's nursing home order, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending August 20th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana U.S. Senators Todd Young and Mike Braun roundly criticized President Joe Biden for the way the U.S. military's withdrawal from Afghanistan unfolded. The situation on the ground in the Asian nation has been described as a humanitarian crisis, as the Taliban quickly retook the country as Americans withdrew. Senator Mike Braun called the situation an unforced error.
Disgraceful that we're leaving in an embarrassing way like this, reminiscent of what happened in Vietnam.
Senator Todd Young's statement was less critical. He focused on the sacrifices American troops have made for two decades in Afghanistan and called it tragic how fast those gains were lost. President Biden defended his decisions, saying the situation deteriorated faster than expected, blaming Afghan political leaders for fleeing and the Afghan military for failing to adequately fight. Is this a defining moment for President Biden? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Jennifer Hollowell. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Lindsay Erdody, WFYI digital editor for health and education. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, is this a defining moment for the president?
It absolutely is a defining moment for President Biden. And unfortunately, he has failed in every aspect of this and just continues to dig in with defensive and unbelievable comments, blaming really everyone but himself. You know, we've got military leaders, allies, people all around the world just in disbelief. And over the last 20 years, we've lost thousands of lives and spent hundreds of billions of dollars only to have it end in this just terrible, unthinkable way. And now we've got thousands of Afghan people who've been cooperating with US troops and our allies, and women and children just being slaughtered. Like, it's heart-wrenching. But also, I mean, it's potentially a defining moment for our country and the message that we're sending to terrorists and would-be bad actors across the world. If we don't have the will to do what we need to do to be successful in these situations, we're potentially changing our role in the world. And so I think we've really got to... we've really got to figure out what we want to be, what America's role in the world is going to be in the future. But, you know, this in particular, President Biden has failed all along the way. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, this is the same person who campaigned telling us that he was going to strengthen America's position on the world stage and has just completely and utterly failed.
Ann Delaney, the criticism has been coming from the left and the right here, certainly not just one party. Does this have the potential to impact the rest of Biden's presidency?
I don't think so. And frankly, this outcome was determined as soon as Donald Trump decided to sit down and negotiate directly with the Taliban without the Afghan government as part of that. He obviously indicated by issuing a timetable for withdrawal that he had absolutely no confidence in the Afghan government or the Afghan ability to resist the Taliban. He even speculated that the Taliban would make good governing. Okay, that was from Donald Trump. So this terrible exit was guaranteed from the beginning of that kind of course that Donald Trump sent us on early in 2020. And frankly, you know, I was opposed to being in Afghanistan, okay? I thought we should go get Osama bin Laden, but once we got him, we should be out of there. History should teach us something about this. Alexander the Great, the Russians and the British all tried to control Afghanistan unsuccessfully. This is not a country. It's a series of tribes. And it's not in this century or the last century, maybe not even in the century before. Now, what President Biden has done is to make sure that all Americans and all the and hopefully all those who have helped Americans get out of the country safely. And if people are upset about that, I suggest that they start giving to groups like Exodus, to help resettle these refugees who have risked a lot to be loyal to the Americans. Now is the time to welcome them to our country, not repudiate them, welcome them, make them feel at home, and help them get settled. But I think President Biden is doing as good a job as he can, despite the terrible hand that was dealt to him by Donald Trump.
You know, it's not very often Alexander the Great is brought up on this show. Lindsay or Doty, and Delaney,
there's a message in that.
And Delaney just referenced refugee resettlement. Is that the next political battle that we're going to see unfold from Afghanistan?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you talk about this being a defining moment for the presidency, and I think it's hard to see how it's not, but it's also still unfolding. So now we have to see, you know, as we keep bringing Americans back home and how he handles the whole refugee situation, you know, that's going to play into this as well. I mean, that's, you know, kind of like you're saying, like, this is still ongoing. But the images we've seen so far of, you know, people clinging to airplanes and handing babies over fences, it's, even though it's early on in his presidency, it's hard to see how this is not a defining moment, even, you know, this far into the whole situation.
John Schwanis, the reality is there's always going to be a blame game in a situation like this. And yes, the idea of the withdrawal was started and negotiated in part by President Donald Trump, but President Joe Biden is the president now. And when we're talking about how the actual withdrawal is unfolding, does it all fall on his head?
Well, earlier in the week, he gave a speech where he indicated that I think he used the phrase, the buck stops here, that he did take full responsibility. But it sort of rang hollow, it seemed to me, because then and at a subsequent speech that took place just before the taping of this program, he still seemed to, you know, on the one hand, the buck stops here, but on the other hand, look over there. It might be here, it might be there. It's not, you know, he seemed to double down on the notion that his administration is somehow doing almost a good job, the way he talked about it, again, at this event that preceded the taping of this program, talking about what the U.S. military had secured and down to the numbers of people who had been airlifted out and so forth. So, but clearly it's damaging. Here's a time when Kamala Harris is making a trip to Southeast Asia. Normally that would be getting a lot of attention. It's an important trip to try to mend some of the relationships that were strained perhaps during the previous administration. Is anybody paying attention to that? No. And I don't think they will because of this. So it's let's keep in mind that the president's own State Department, and this was reported initially by the Wall Street Journal and subsequently by other news organizations, there were cables issued by the State Department saying, this is not going to happen the way you want it to happen. It's unfolding too quickly. We don't have the visa program up and running the way that it should have. We've had months to prepare. We kind of didn't get it done. And that's his own State Department, or I should say theoretically or nonpartisan career professionals who did sound an alarm, as we now know, because of the reporting from the Wall Street Journal this week.
All right. Well, moving on, Governor Eric Holcomb says health is Indiana's Achilles heel, and he's creating a public health commission to try to improve it. The commission will spend the next year developing recommendations meant to strengthen the state's public health system. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says the new commission will look at the funding, operations, and structure of the system, particularly across the state's 94 local health departments.
We believe that we'll be able to identify ways to better support public health, reduce health disparities, and ensure that where you live will not be the determining factor with regards to your access of the public health services you can receive.
The commission, however, faces an environment in which many Hoosiers don't believe or trust local health officials, while local elected officials have ignored health departments and state lawmakers have stripped away some of their power. Holcomb says he and the commission will do what they can.
But what we can do is make sure people have good, localized, trusted, verified state information.
The commission will be led by former State Senator Luke Kenley and former State Health Commissioner Dr. Judy Monroe. Ann Delaney, can this commission be effective?
No, this is absolutely amazing. The Republicans have been in control for the last 17 years when Indiana has hovered between 47th and 49th in spending on health care. 47th is what we are now, okay? They are sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money that they can't decide what to spend. And so what do? They create a commission to kick the can down the road so that the next time this issue comes up, they'll say the budget's too tight, we can't do anything. You know, we have a very unhealthy population. We're obese, we smoke too much, we have diabetes, we have all of these issues, and we have access to health care as a major issue. The governor could step forward right now and address a lot of these without touching the vaccine issue at the moment, which he's so afraid of touching. But he could do something tangible with the money he has available. And instead, like everything else he does, he creates a commission. He created a commission about diversity, okay? And then they bring in the new class of state troopers that are all white. I mean, do something instead of sitting around and talking about doing something would be meaningful. He's not up to doing that.
Jennifer Hollowell, given the strain, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put this, the strained relationship that local health departments seem to have with the public and local health departments in some places even seem to have with their local elected officials. So much of the message of this commission, at least at this point, is that we are looking to strengthen the local health department system across the state. Is that going to be an effective solution?
I think it's an important a process to undertake as far as it relates to what is the best way to improve public health across the state. And, you know, you have state and local health departments playing different roles, and the pandemic certainly brought to the forefront this issue for a lot of people. Most people aren't even aware of their local health department because in many cases it's, you know, investigating restaurants, et cetera, but it's not something that you are aware of what they're trying to do in an overall kind of perspective. So yes, the state does have a long way to go to improve our position on public health. And part of that is funding. And frankly, you know, Anne expressed her doubts about what can happen. I haven't seen the whole makeup of the commission, but I certainly hope that there are current state legislators who are a part of that, because it does take money. And I think that there are a lot of folks who don't really look at the whole picture and understand the funding and where we are vis-a-vis other states, but also what that funding can go to, you know, mental health services, variety of things that would make a big difference. And, but it requires dollars and a commitment. And to this point, you know, I think people have viewed it in different ways. They view healthcare, delivery of healthcare, and public health as the same thing, obviously very different and impact each other. And the cost of healthcare is more when we have an unhealthy population. So, you know, I think it's important that we go through this process. I think that they're going to have to come up with recommendations and a compelling message to legislators to increase funding for these kinds of programs. The last thing I'd say, you know, during the pandemic, there were some local health departments that like shut down at the time when they were really needed. They were closed. But IU School of Public Health actually just did a study that wrapped up, I think, at the end of the year that evaluated a lot of these things. There's a lot of interesting information and data in that. And one of the things that they hold out as a positive was the city of Fishers that created their own health department in the middle of the pandemic because they wanted their residents to have access to experts and then what ended up being testing and vaccines, et cetera. And I'm not saying that every community should do that. I don't think it's a one size fits all, but there are different ways to figure out how to improve public health across the state. And I'm glad that there's a group that the governor's called together to do that.
John Schwanes, Jennifer just talked about it. The governor talked about it at the press conference announcing this, but funding is going to be key to a lot of this. The governor also compared this public health commission to the teacher pay commission. And the legislature largely ignored the teacher pay commission until late in session when they did enact many of the recommendations after a financial bonanza, the likes of which we are unlikely to see anytime soon. So if that's really what it takes to get the legislature to really open up the pocketbook, is there much hope for that on the health front?
It's a tall order. And we've talked mostly so far about money. And money, of course, is at the root of this problem, the lack of spending. And talked about the rankings. I think if you look at spending on public health in our state, we are down basically at the, almost at the bottom of the barrel. But I don't think money alone is the issue, the only issue. Because, and you touched on this earlier, Brandon, when you talked about some of the sense of anti-medicine or anti-science sentiment that's, that you see across large portions of the state. For instance, when we had a problem with HIV/AIDS infection because of shared needles a few years ago down in the southern part of the state, there was no shortage of money to pay for a needle exchange program. The problem there was people didn't want a needle exchange program because they thought it was somehow bad. So I think in addition to throwing money at the problem, which clearly has to happen, there also has to be some way to help Hoosiers, and this is a national problem, it's not just Hoosiers, but help them understand science is good. It solved a lot of our problems as a society and made us much better. Luke Kenley, I think, is a smart choice. He's not an ideologue. He knows the General Assembly well, and clearly he's qualified on all healthcare matters because his brother, a physician, Dr. David Kenley, delivered my middle child. So he, what more credentials would he possibly need?
Wow.
Lindsay or Doty, to this issue that John just talked about, this idea of it's more than just money. It's we have to grapple with people who are rejecting what experts are telling them. We asked Governor Holcomb that question. He said, well, you know, we here at the state level are going to do what we can do, which is to provide people with local trusted information. Is the governor being optimistic or naive?
I think he's being optimistic. You know, I think one of the things this commission, you know, when we talk about whether or not it's going to be successful in getting some things done, on the one hand, we're talking about improving public health with, you know, obesity, infant mortality, smoking rates, all of those things where we rank really poorly. But on the other hand, you're also talking about improving, like, the bureaucracy of public health departments and local health departments and everything that goes into that and the policies. And I think the thing you might see more of more quickly is the bureaucracy side of things. You know, when they're supposed to come up with this report next summer, I think that's the thing we might see the needle move on faster, especially when you think about some of these public health issues are not things that can be solved quickly, even if you are throwing money at them, even if you are creating new programs, even if you are getting people to trust, you know, are these things going to magically be drastically improved by 2024, 2025? Probably not. But then that, you know, raises another question of how long do you wait before you say whether or not this commission was successful?
That'll be a topic for a future show down the line, I guess. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Governor Eric Holcomb optimistic or naive about the potential of his public health commission? A, optimistic, or B, naive? Last week's question, will this be another lost school year because of COVID-19 disruptions? 55% of you say yes, 45% say no. And if you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, President Joe Biden this week announced that nursing homes must vaccinate all their staff against COVID-19 or risk losing federal Medicare and Medicaid funding. According to CDC data, only about 60% of nursing home staff nationwide are vaccinated. Here in Indiana, that number is only about 52%. The Biden mandate could take effect as early as next month, and he would use regulatory authority similar to how the Trump administration forced nursing homes to prohibit visitors last year. Some national nursing home leaders praised Biden's announcement, though they warned that if all healthcare workers across the nation aren't required to be vaccinated, nursing homes could face serious staffing problems. Lindsay or Doty, up to this point, Joe Biden has largely used the carrot approach when it comes to vaccines, but we've started to see that shift. So will the stick be more effective?
It's possible. You know, we've seen in some various other cases where the mandates come down that it does motivate people a little bit more. But I think the key thing here is that, you know, if you're a nursing home and you say, okay, all the staff has to be vaccinated and you're an unvaccinated staff member and you don't want to be vaccinated, then what's to stop you from going and getting a different job in healthcare? Because right now there's burnout across the board, there are job openings across the board, and obviously it varies, you know, from position or, you know, where you might be going to work, because some other places do have the mandates in place. But if you can find a job somewhere else that's not going to require you to be vaccinated, especially when there's like $1,000 sign-on bonuses and things like that right now, I don't see why you don't go do that. So then it kind of goes back to, you know, what we've heard from some people already is, for this to work, you're going to have the mandate not just be at nursing homes. It's going to have to be across the entire healthcare system.
Yeah, to that point, John Schwanis, is that the key to making this work? It can't just be limited to nursing homes?
Yeah, I think the carrot clearly did not work. That's why we're all sitting in our respective locations and not in the studios at WFYI. Clearly, the carrot approach wasn't working. And I think we're going to see more and more of this as employers, both public and private sector, are biting down and saying, this is something our workforce needs to do. I'm sorry if you don't like it. You're going to have to look elsewhere.
Jennifer Hollowell, this might seem broad, I suppose, but is this the right thing for the federal government to be doing?
Well, I don't know that it is the right thing for the federal government to do, but and again, I've said this before, but before we have like full approval on these vaccines, that still is a hesitation that a lot of people have. But look, generally, I agree that if you're working in a nursing home, you should be vaccinated. I know some people don't like that. I apologize, but you know, there are a lot of places where you don't have to. I understand in the healthcare industry the need and concern for that, especially in a nursing home where you have more vulnerable populations. And what we have seen and are seeing right now with rising hospitalizations across the country is that it is among people who are not vaccinated. So I think at this point, it's the employer's choice. And if you, as the employee, choose not to, then you can find a different place to work.
And Ann Delaney, is that perhaps the most compelling argument here on this particular mandate is nursing homes house the most vulnerable people when it comes to this virus. So, of course, the people who work there should be vaccinated.
I think so. And I frankly applaud the president for having the leadership to step up and mandate this. And frankly, many of the hospital systems around the country are going to that same approach. Because when you're dealing with people who need hospitalization or need a nursing home, by definition, you have people that are more vulnerable. So it is absolutely, frankly, immoral for people to work in those facilities without getting vaccinated first. So I think if they don't like it, they should go back and find another job, because clearly they're not interested in caring for people if they're willing to risk the health of those people by not being vaccinated.
Indiana's 2022 U.S. Senate race is starting to take shape. Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott took steps this week to join the campaign seeking to unseat incumbent Republican Todd Young. McDermott, a Democrat, ran for the U.S. House in the last election cycle. Now he's filed paperwork to change his campaign to one for the U.S. Senate, though he hasn't formally announced a run. The only other Democrat who's filed paperwork and is raising money is attorney Hanifa Kalik. Regardless of which Democrat wins the May Senate primary next year, they'll face an uphill battle against Todd Young. He's already got millions of dollars in his campaign account as he vies for a second term. John Schwanis, McDermott is known as, let's put it this way, a colorful character. Is he the right fit for a Senate candidate?
He's available, and I guess he wants the job, which kind of is the qualification right now for Democrats going against a Republican incumbent. In a state at a time when the state seems to be solidly Republican and when Todd Young seems to be doing more or less what the state of Indiana wants him to do. He's sort of, I know we will debate about whether at times he's been more of a middle of the road maverick a la, you know, Dick Lugar, although I'm not sure at the time we used the word middle of the road maverick for Dick Lugar, but more of a Dick Lugar or more of an ideologue. He's trying, I think, to sort of satisfy both camps, but I guess that's what you do when you're an incumbent trying to maintain your.
That's
office.
A pretty
you
know, cynical approach.
All right, I real quick. This is going to be this is going to have to be the last word. Lindsay or Doty, is the reality for the Democrats in this particular race, in this particular cycle, going to be a little bit of a sacrificial lamb candidate?
I think so. I mean, Todd Young has $4.5 million cash on hand as of the end of June. So you're going to have to raise a lot of money very quickly to do something about it. And it might be just that, you know, this way he gets his name out there, he, you know, gets to be more well-known around the state, and then this sets him up for something else later on. But Todd Young, as of right now, is still in a very good position.
All right. Well, that is going to have to be it. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdody of WFYI. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.